I trust you had a good Thanksgiving with family and friends. We certainly did with our family, and often in my past, Thanksgiving literally was over the river and through the woods to grandmother's house we go. Such was the case with Max Lucado a few years back, so I thought you might enjoy part of his Thanksgiving blog from then. I drove the family to Grandma last night for Thanksgiving. They're 3 hours into the six-hour trip. I realized that I was in a theology lab. A day with a car full of kids will teach you a lot about God. Transporting a family from one city to another is closely akin to God transporting us from our home to His. And some of life's stormiest hours occur when the passengers and the driver disagree on the destination. A journey is a journey, whether it's the destination is a Thanksgiving table or a heavenly one. Both demand patience, a good sense of direction, and a driver who knows that the feast at the end of the trip is worth the hassles in the middle of the trip. The fact that my pilgrims were all under the age of 7 only enriched my learning experience. As minutes rolled into hours and our car rolled through the hills, I began to realize that I was saying to my kids, it had a familiar ring to it. I had heard it before from God. All of a sudden, the car became a classroom, and I realized that I was doing for a few hours what God has done for centuries, encouraging His readers and travelers who'd rather rest than ride. I shared the idea with Denalyn, and we began to discover similarities between the two journeys. Here are a few that we noted. First, in order to reach the destination, we had to say no to some requests. Can you imagine the outcome if a parent honored each request of each child during a trip? Then Max goes on to relate all of the no's on their trip. Everything from chili dogs and cheeseburgers to pit stops and convenience stores. And can you imagine the chaos if every parent indulged their children's requests? Can you imagine the chaos if God indulged each of ours? No is a necessary word to take on a trip. Destination has to reign over Dairy Delight ice cream sundaes. For God has not destined us to the terrors of judgment, but to the full attainment of salvation through our Lord Jesus Christ. 1 Thessalonians 5:18. Did you know God's destiny for your life? Salvation. God's overarching desire is that you reach that destiny. A second similarity between the two journeys, children have no concept of minutes or miles. We'll be there in 3 hours, I said. How long is 3 hours, Jenna asked. How do you explain time to a child who can't tell time? Well, it's about as long as 3 Sesame Streets, I ventured. Oh, the children groaned in unison. 3 Sesame Streets? That's forever. And to them, it is. And to us, it seems that way too. He who lives forever has placed himself at the head of a band of pilgrims who mutter, "How long, Lord? How long?" Psalm 74:10. Max continues, "How long? How long must I endure this sickness? How long must I endure this spouse? How long must I endure this paycheck?" Do you really want God to answer? He could, you know. He could answer in terms of the here and now, with increments of time that we understand. 2 more years on the illness, the rest of your life in the marriage, 10 more years for the bills. But he seldom does that. God usually opts to measure the here and now against the there and then. And when you compare this life to that life, this life ain't so long. Our days on earth are like a shadow, 1 Chronicles 29:15. Each man's life is but a breath, Psalm 39:5. You are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes, James 4:14. As for man, his days are like the grass. He flourishes like a flower in the field. The wind blows over it and it is gone, and it's in its place remembers it no more. Psalm 103:13-16. It's a short journey, I told the children. We're almost there. I know. I have been there before. I've driven this road. I've covered this territory. And for me, it's no challenge. But for the children, it's eternal. So I tried another approach. Just south. Think how good it'll be. Turkey and dressing and pumpkin pie. I promise you, when you get there, it will be worth it. But they all still groan. Which takes us to the third similarity. Children can't envision the reward. For me, 6 hours on the highway is a small price to pay for my mom's strawberry cake. I don't mind the drive because I know the reward. I have 3 decades of Thanksgiving under my belt, literally. As I drive, I can taste the turkey, hear the dinner table laughter, smell the smoke from the fireplace. I can endure the journey because I know the destiny. My daughters have forgotten the destiny. After all, they are young children, and children easily forget. Besides, the road is strange and the dark night has come. They can't see where they're going. It's my job as their father to guide them. I try to help them see what they can't see. I tell them how we'll feed the ducks on the lake and how we'll play on the swings and how they can spend the night with their cousins. We'll speak of sleeping on the floor and sleeping bags and staying up late because there's no school. And it seems to work. Their grumbling decreases as their vision clears, as their destiny unfolds. It's not easy to get 3 girls under the age of 7 to see a city they can't see, but it's necessary. It's not easy for us to see a city we've never seen either, especially when the road is bumpy and the hour is late and the companions are wanting to cancel the trip and take up residence in a motel. It's not easy to fix our eyes on the unseen, but it's necessary. Perhaps that's how the Apostle Paul stayed motivated. He had a clear vision of the reward. 2 Corinthians 4:16-18. Therefore, we do not lose heart. Though outwardly we are wasting away, yet inwardly we are being renewed day by day. For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but what is unseen. Max continues, "Can I speak candidly for a few lines? For some of you, the journey has been very long, very stormy. In no way do I wish to minimize the difficulties that you have had to face along the way. Some of you have shouldered burdens that few of us could ever carry. You have bid farewell to lifelong partners. You've been robbed of your lifelong dreams. You have been given bodies that can't sustain your spirit. You have spouses who won't tolerate your faith. You have bills that outnumber the paycheck and challenges that outweigh the strength. And you are tired. It's hard to see the city in the midst of the storms. The desire to pull over to the side of the road and get out entices you. You want to go on, but some days the road seems so long. Let me encourage you with one final parallel between your life's journey and the one our family took last night. It's worth it. As I write this, the Thanksgiving meal is over. My legs are propped up on the hearth and the tablet is on my lap, and I have every intention of dozing off as soon as I finish this blog. The turkey has been attacked. The giblet gravy has been gobbled and the table is clear. The girls are napping and the family is content. As we sat around the table, no one spoke about the long trip to get here. No one mentioned the requests that I did not honor. No one grumbled about my foot being on the accelerator when their mind was on the banana splits. No one complained about the late hour of arrival. Yesterday's challenges were lost in today's joy. That's what Paul meant. God never said that the journey would be easy, but he did say that the arrival would be worthwhile. Remember this, God may not do what you want, but he will do what is right and best. He's the father of forward motion. Trust him. He will get you home, and the trials of the trip will be lost in the joys of the feast. Thanks, Max. But as for right now, here today, for me, an early Christmas would be just fine. There's an edginess out there, a trepidation, a fear. Society seems to be like a straw with near a burning match, combustible. Anger marches in our city streets. Anger marks the cable news. Some folks don't like the government. Others don't like the candidates. It's as if we're crammed onto a subway train with an unclear destination. Maybe we really need an early Christmas, like right now. It's just Thanksgiving, I know, and we've got a month to go. And Black Friday and trees and sales and lights are here upon us. But it's not too soon for the message of the manger. Time to turn off all of the noise out there. This is a season of joy. Chuck Swindoll observes, joy. Everyone wants it. Everyone promises it. But can anyone deliver it? It might surprise you to know that joy is a big deal in the Bible. Simply put, God wants his children to be joy-filled. Just like a father wants his baby to laugh with glee, God brings and longs for us to experience a deep-seated, deeply rooted joy. The joy offered by God, joy, is very different from the one promised at the car dealership or at the shopping mall. God's not interested in putting a temporary smile on your face. He wants to deposit resilient hope in your heart. He's got no interest in giving you a shallow happiness that melts away at the first sign of adversity. But he does offer you a joy that is heartfelt, honest to goodness, ballistic, strong sense of joy that can weather the most difficult of storms. Paul referred to this joy in the opening words of his epistle. And not Paul, but Peter is today's text. 1 Peter 1, verses 8 and 9. Though you have not seen him, you love him. And even though you do not see him now, you believe in him and are filled with an inexpressible and glorious joy. For you are receiving the end result of your faith, the salvation of your souls. Who was Peter addressing when he spoke of unspeakable joy? He was speaking, quote, to God's chosen people who are away from their homes and are scattered all around the countries of Pontus, Galatia, Cappadocia, Asia, and Bithynia. Peter was speaking to persecuted Christian people who had been driven from their homes, separated from their families, their rights had been taken, their possessions had been seized, their property was taken, the future was taken, but their joy had not been taken. Why? Well, let's go back to Peter's epistle and read it again from another translation. You have never seen Jesus, and you don't see him now, but you still love him and have faith in him. The source of their joy? Jesus. And since no one could take their Jesus, no one could take their joy. Max asks, what about you? What's been taken from you? Your health? Your house? Have you buried a dream? Have you buried a marriage? Buried a friend? Are you looking at these burial plots of life, wanting to know if your joy is buried there too? If so, you may have substituted contingent joy for courageous joy. Contingent joy is always depending on the circumstance. Contingent joy says, I'll be happy when, or I'll be happy if. I'll be happy when I have a new house or a new job. I'll be happy when I'm healed, when I'm home. Contingent joy depends upon the right circumstances. And since we can't control our circumstances, we can set ourselves up for disappointment. And envision the person who buys the lie of contingent joy. As a young person, they assume, if I get a car, I'll be happy. They get a car, the car wears out. They look for joy elsewhere. If I get married, I'll be happy. So they get married and then disappointed if their spouse can't deliver. This goes on through a series of attempts. If I get a new job, if we have a baby, if I can retire. In each case, joy comes, then diminishes. And by the time this person reaches old age, he has ridden a roller coaster of hope and disappointment. He becomes sour and fearful. Contingent joy can turn us into wounded people. Courageous joy, however, turns us into strong people. Courageous joy sets the hope of your heart on Jesus, Jesus alone. And since no one can take our Christ, no one can take your joy. Think about it. Can death take your joy? No, because Jesus is greater than death. Can failure take your joy? No, because Jesus is greater than your sin. Can betrayal take your joy? No, because Jesus will never leave you. Can sickness take your joy? No, because God has promised, whether on this side of the grave or the other, he will heal you. Can disappointment take your joy? No, because though your plan may not work out, you know God's plan will. All things work together for good to them that love God, to those who are called according to his purpose. Death, failure, betrayal, sickness, disappointment. They cannot take your joy because they cannot take your Jesus. And Jesus promised no one will ever take away your joy. John 16:22. Is that to say your life will be storm-free? Is that to say no sorrows will come your way? No. In this world you'll have tribulation, but be of good cheer. I have overcome the world. John 16:33. Is that to say that you will never cross the dry lands of sorrow? No. But that is to say your sorrow will not last forever. Your grief will turn to joy. John 16:20. Joy comes in the morning. Max shares, years ago, I lived on a houseboat that was docked on the Miami River. The level of the river would rise and fall with the tide, and the boat rocked back and forth with the river traffic. But though the level changed and the boat rocked, we never drifted. Why? Because we were anchored to a concrete sea wall. Courageous, joyful people have done the same. They have anchored their heart to the shorelines of God. Will a boat rock? Yes. Will moods come and go? No doubt. But they will not be left adrift on the Atlantic of despair. No, for they have found a joy which remains courageous through the storm. And this courageous joy is quick to become a contagious joy. Christians of the New Testament church were not known for their buildings or for their denominations or programs. They were known for their joy. They ate together in their homes, happy to share their food with joyful hearts. They praised God and were liked by all people. It tells us in Acts 2:46-47. The early Christians were joyful Christians, and how they loved one another. In fact, you might agree that there is no other type, for in the purest sense, the phrase joyful Christian is redundant. We shouldn't need the adjective. We don't put the word dead in front of the word cadaver, or wet in front of water. So ideally, we shouldn't have to put joyful in front of Christian. But we do. We do because we tend to major in contingent joy and not courageous joy. But God can change that. Let's assess our joy level. Are we joyless? Do we spread more pessimism than we do hope? If so, God can help you. Grimness is not a Christian virtue. So believe that joy is possible. And don't give in to despair. When Jesus said to his followers what he said, he says to you, John 15:11, I have told you this so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. Be open to the possibility, joy from heaven. Joy may be elusive, but it's never gone. Sometimes it just takes a little work. Again, Max relates, my friend Jerry has taught me the value of gratitude. He is 78 years old and regularly shoots his age on the golf course. If I ever do the same, I'll need to live to be over 100. His dear wife, Ginger, battles Parkinson's disease. What should have been a wonderful season of retirement has been marred by multiple hospital stays and medication struggle. There are many days that she just cannot keep her balance, and Jerry has to be there by her side. Yet he never complains. He always has a smile and a joke, and he relentlessly beats me in golf. I asked Jerry his secret, and he said, every morning, Ginger and I sit together and sing a hymn. I asked her what she wants to sing, and She almost always says, count your blessings. So we sing. And when we get to the line that says, name them one by one, we stop and do just that. And when we are through recognizing the truth of these many, many blessings, it does more to relieve her pain and my anxiety than any of her meds can do. Anxiety thrives in the petri dish of if only. It doesn't survive in the world of already. For that reason, we treat each anxious thought with a grateful one. So we can take a moment and follow Jerry's example. Just look at your blessings. Do you have any friends, family? Do you see any grace from God? Do you see the love of God? Do you see any gifts and abilities, talents, skills? And as you look at your blessings, take note of what happens. Sorrow grabs his bags, slips out the back door. Unhappiness refuses to share a heart that's full of gratitude. One heartfelt thank you will suck the oxygen out of this world. So say it often. Who's to say God won't give the same to you? So why don't you call on him? Simply ask God, Lord, what is separating me from true joy? Ask him to replace your contingent joy with courageous joy. Ask him to help you anchor to the firm rock of his shoreline. Ask him to show you the joy that cannot be taken. He will. He will stir up a revival of contagious joy in your heart. Selah.